thanks for joining. Today I have Ashwin Ramaswamy. Did I say that correctly?
That's good. Yeah. Okay.
No relation to Vivek.
That's right. No relation to Vivek. Ramaswamy is a very common last name.
It's as common as the name Smith or Johnson in America, right?
It is very common in South India.
Have you met Vivek?
I've not met him before.
Okay, cool. All right. So if you will, tell us about yourself.
I'm running for state senate in District 48. I'm from Johns Creek, Georgia, which is where I was born and raised. And I have a background in technology, law, and policy. I used to do computer science, software coding. I realized the importance of people with technology backgrounds in government. I worked in the federal government on cybersecurity and election security. And ultimately, I realized we need more people like me who are young, who also have the talents and skills to prepare our government for the future.
So for those who don't know, Johns Creek is an affluent suburb in North Atlanta. We're recording right now in Roswell, which is another affluent suburb in North Atlanta. Is Johns Creek in North Fulton?
It is.
So right on the edge, maybe?
Right on the edge.
Yeah.
It's like the corner of the top right.
And you've recently got a lot of press, kind of worldwide press. And tell us about that.
Recently, we actually were featured in national newspapers in India, which includes the Hindu and the Times of India. We were on the cover of the Times of India, and it's incredible about this because so many folks in India speak English. Times of India is actually it's the newspaper with the most number of, it's the most widely read like English newspaper in the world. Hmm. I got coverage because I'm not only running in Georgia and doing this work here, I'm the first Gen Z Indian American to run for a legislative office. And I didn't realize that until they covered me. And I realized that in a way, I'm representing a new generation of leaders who are taking the mantle on themselves to make the world a better place.
No, that's really cool. That's really cool. There's a lot of ageism in politics in America. I mean, if you look at what's going on with Biden and Trump, people are attacking their ages.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're older. But as we continue to experience longevity and people living a longer time or people living a lot longer, you know, if you own your own company and you're running your company into your 90s, most people aren't going to say much. I mean, Rupert Murdoch's a good example of that. Obviously, he had lieutenants and executives underneath him. But still, I think I'm probably incorrect on this assumption or how I'm wording this, but I think he stepped down just a few years ago. But he obviously still is involved. So I bring that up because Biden and Trump are quite old, but there's reverse ageism as well that some people might say you're too young. And now I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it's one thing if someone's really young and they don't have proper experience and maybe they're at such an age that they should be in school or whichever instead of trying to get into politics. But you're 24, right?
That's right.
Okay. And you finished college a few years ago?
Yeah.
And which school did you go to?
I'm an undergrad in computer science at Stanford.
Okay. And what did you do right after college?
So what happened is I started this when I was actually in college and I continued after college. I started working in the federal government at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. What I realized was I didn't want to work at a tech company. It felt like there's many thousands of engineers just like me. And there I actually started working in 2020 on protecting our schools, hospitals, and elections from cyber attacks. And there I saw that there were so few people like me who had that kind of background working in software engineering, going to work in the government, that immediately I was valuable. I was able to work on all of these critical things in order to secure our election in 2020. And that's what made me just more interested in government and public service, because I realized that there's so much more of opportunities to work there because most of the talent ends up going to the private sector. The public sector is always starved of this kind of talent.
Right.
And that's partly why I'm now running for state senate. I think the state governments need more folks with this kind of background, even more than the federal government as well.
So you worked for Eric Schmidt for a while, right? Or one of his ventures?
I did. I worked for his philanthropy called Schmidt Futures.
And was that in Atlanta or DC or out west?
So they have a few offices. One is in New York, one is in DC. But yeah, I worked for them. I was in DC for a bit, also in Atlanta, a lot of remote work. And yeah, I think there again, I saw the value of working on just understanding how policy is made in terms of there's a whole ecosystem of you have think tanks, which first come up with ideas. Then they talk to policymakers, and that's how ultimately we the conversation changes in terms of what we need to do to protect our businesses from cyber attacks or how we protect open source software. So I was able to have a front row seat into how nonprofits ask for funding and how funding is given. And it gave me a great opportunity to just understand that whole piece of the puzzle as well.
So you are running as a Democrat against a Republican in Johns Creek, right?
That's right.
Is this for House or Senate? Obviously, it's for state legislature.
It's for state senate, and my district includes parts of North Fulton County, South Forsyth County, and North Gwinnett County as well.
Any other challengers?
At the moment, no other challengers.
So you'll probably win the primary.
We can't take anything for granted, but we'll know by the first week of March. That's the qualifying deadline.
Spoken like a true politician. Who are you running against?
I'm running against Sean Still. He's an incumbent who got, he actually made the news for being one of the fake electors in 2020. He was indicted with former President Trump for his role in trying to overturn the 2020 election results. It's partly why I saw that seat, and I thought, hey, we need people who are not just going to get bogged down in these, national debates about election fraud and all these things, which are often unfounded. We need someone who's going to focus on Georgia and Georgians in our constituency.
And I'm obviously a moderate conservative. A few friends who are like myself, we always complain that the left views us as right wingers, and then right wingers view us as centrists. So it's really annoying. But the reason I bring that up is because during the Trump election, or his re-election, when he was running against Biden, Trump received a lot of votes. I think based on the drama and all of the kind of headlines coming out during his presidency, I was quite surprised that he received that many votes. And the reason I bring that up is because that wasn't enough for a lot of people. They were not pleased that Trump lost the election, and they've been kicking up this narrative that the election was stolen. And my whole thought is Trump received a lot more votes than I thought he would, anyways. I mean, he received, I don't know the actual number, right? So I guess what I'm trying to say is, why on earth would you fight the election results and get involved in this? And what is your opinion, if you have one, on guys like Sean Stancil,
Todd
or
Still.
Sean, sorry, Sean Still, who immediately attached themselves to this and got involved in something that now they're probably regretting to a degree? I mean, the thing is, I guess, from their perspective, they look like legit Trumpers. But I know a few lawyers in town here in Roswell who attached themselves to that fiasco. And I don't know if they've been indicted. Maybe they were. I haven't followed it that closely. But I know one of them was fired from his law firm right after he got involved. But as you would expect, what's your opinion on that? Like, I mean, it was obviously, not to use the nothing, it was obviously trumped up, right? Just so happens that Trump's name is Trump as well. But I mean, it just seems a little foolish that so many individuals tied themselves to this, and now they're having to deal with it and duke it out in the prosecutor's office. And that's obviously another situation because Willis, the prosecutor, has her own drama going on.
A lot of drama
A lot of drama. Like,
everywhere.
Fulton County is on the map right now. It's under a microscope when it comes to legality and these other situations. But yeah, what is your opinion on that? Like, why did someone like Sean Stills do that? Is he just this massive Trumper?
And my opinion is that I think we should don't forget that in 2020, Trump was still president of the United States.
Sure.
There was no guarantee we didn't know who's going to win the election until like election day and the ballots started coming in. So it's really easy to just attach yourself to whoever's in power because that's because you might think like, hey, Trump is going to continue. Like, I don't want to attach myself to the losing side, right?
Sure.
And I think often politicians forget that our democracy does, hopefully it does work, right? If someone wins the election, they take power afterwards. And it's always easy in retrospect to be like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. But I think when people are often caught up in the moment, and then people just think, I'm going to pick what's easiest at the moment, because it's at that time, it was easiest for those folks to go with Trump. And I think that was a complete lack of judgment. And it's a complete lack of respect for institutions as well, by saying that just because Trump's in power and because he's undermining institutions, I'm going to go undermine them with Trump as well.
But you bring up a good point, right? And I haven't thought of it this way. He was president at the time. So politicians who attach themselves to this situation, in their eyes, were probably just supporting the president. So, okay, I mean, that's a fair assessment. I haven't thought of it like
It's
that.
like, what's the quote? If the president does it, it's not illegal. Is
Yeah.
that
I'm pretty sure that comes from Nixon, right?
from
I don't
Nixon?
think he said that on the record, but he definitely said that. I guess it was kind of one of the recordings in the White House or what have you.
We have to remember we swear an oath to the Constitution, and the Constitution is first, not any individual in our political system.
So obviously you seem like a level-headed guy and you're an intelligent individual. So we can talk about your opponent without trashing him. What's the difference between you and your opponent? And you are a Democrat, in case we haven't said that. So you're running against a Republican who's a clear Trumper. Have you met him?
I'm a Democrat. He's a Republican. I have met him.
How was that?
I don't think he was happy I was running. That's
Okay,
all I'm
even though
saying.
you're on the other side, right? Okay, so it wasn't too cordial.
It wasn't. He wasn't very happy,
That's too bad.
because he's facing a real challenge, right? And that's the case there.
And like I mean, you and I have a mutual friend. That's how I met you. And just for the audience here, you're not some crazy left winger, right? You're
I'm not crazy.
not a crazy left winger at all. You're very easy to talk to. So that's unfortunate that your opponent just, was, I guess, lukewarm to your existence. But whatever that may be, you've met him. When is your election?
The general elections on in November with the presidential
Obviously,
election.
I shouldn't have asked that. I know that now that I think about it. What have you seen so far? Like, you've been able to raise decent money, right?
Able to raise a good amount of money.
Yep.
At the moment, we currently have around $200,000.
That's great.
We actually outraised our opponent, the last cycle period, like 8-1.
And hasn't your opponent been funding himself for the most part?
Last year I think he put 300K of his own money into his
Right.
campaign.
And how do the numbers look? Like, is he favored in his district?
It's half and half. You look at the lines today, and you look at the vote in 2020, it was around, I think, 48 or 49% for Biden, and then the remainder was for Trump. So
Yeah.
it's very much a purple district. Anyone who wins needs to appeal to people from both sides and
Right.
say, hey, I'm someone willing to work with both sides as well.
Yeah, that's kind of the reality in Atlanta right now. I mean, obviously, I'm sure someone would argue against this, but the state of Georgia has one city for the most part, the metropolitan Atlanta area. And most of the large cities in Georgia are part of metropolitan Atlanta. And I mentioned that because Atlanta is not Democrat or Republican. It's a mix. It's purple, right? It's a mix of blue and red. So you do have to be able to have dialogue with both sides and reach over the aisle and get along, right? I mean, obviously, the further out of some of these of Metro Atlanta and Central Atlanta, you have more right wingers. But Dunwoody, for example, was half and half. I lived in Dunwoody, Brookhaven for a long time. That's clearly half and half. You have as many Republicans as you do Democrats. When you get down to the city center, you obviously have more Democrats. North Fulton, historically Republican, but that's been changing. It's obviously a very affluent area. Lots of people have moved here over the past 10 years, especially after COVID. I think these upcoming elections will show kind of where Atlanta stands, but I really think it's kind of split down the middle.
I agree. And I think that's one thing which is really crucial in terms of how I think about governing and to this kind of work, is that if you want to make any kind of long-term change, you have to bring both sides along.
Right.
You can't just do it yourself, regardless of how partisan you are. And that's another thing I think which distinguishes me from my opponent. When I was in the federal government working as a nonpartisan civil servant, I worked under both Republican and Democratic administrations. I know how both those folks think, and I'm someone who'll respect anyone regardless of where you come from. And I don't see that in my opponent, given what he did in 2020.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the curse of Georgia is the fact that we just have this one massive city, which is Atlanta. But I had a meeting last week, and someone it was regarding arts philanthropy, and someone showed a comparison. with arts funding in Florida and arts funding in Georgia. And obviously arts funding trended higher in Florida, but Florida has like four or five very large cities. Georgia does not. Any, like I said, any of the large cities that we have outside of Atlanta are part of suburban Atlanta for the most part. Augusta, Macon, Columbus, Savannah are not really cutting it. Athens is almost part of suburban Atlanta. So I like to call that the curse of Atlanta, right? Because like we're gonna grow. It's a great state, it's a great city, but everything is in Atlanta, and that's not gonna change.
Right. But I think there's ways that, from the state level, we should be investing throughout our state, right?
Sure, probably.
And are there ways to make sure, regardless of where you are, whether you're in Atlanta or outside Atlanta, you should have the ability to have world-class education,
Yeah.
have the jobs you want, and take every city's unique strengths and help them to play to those strengths as well.
And I guess from a state perspective, because Atlanta is such a juggernaut, because we're such an economic powerhouse, and because we are the main population center by far, you just don't see a lot of investment throughout the state.
Exactly. It's a huge problem in all kinds of fields, whether it's education, whether it's access to healthcare. We just need to start investing throughout the state.
And unless there's more investment throughout the state, more people will move to Atlanta.
Yeah,
It's compounding that
it's a
issue.
vicious cycle,
It's a
right?
vicious cycle. So if you're elected, what are some of the first things you plan to do?
The first things I plan to do is I plan to focus on education, economy, public safety, and well-being. That means is, first of all, we want to take our $11 billion surplus and make sure we are spending it on investments that will improve our future, such as paying our teachers more, closing the gap between urban and rural hospitals in terms of access to healthcare.
Right.
We should be expanding Medicaid because right now there's a lot of money which we're taking, which is from the federal government, which we're keeping off the table because for some reason we don't want to take the federal money. We want to make sure those tax dollars come and give more folks access to healthcare. And we also want to make sure that we're creating more incentives for entrepreneurship, small businesses right here, and whether it's in Atlanta or throughout the state, so we can have more of that kind of innovation as well.
So, what are some of the challenges you see for your district and also Atlanta?
Some of the challenges, I think the first challenge is that we need to motivate people to care about down ballot races and to actually go and vote.
Right.
Too often, well, first of all, a lot of people aren't plugged into politics, but even the
Right.
people who are plugged
And
in
that's a
are,
huge problem.
yes, that's a huge problem. A lot of education needs to happen, but also people who are plugged in, they just know about national stuff. They don't have no idea what's going on at the state
Yeah.
level. I've had so many conversations where I explained to people that I'm not running for the US Senate, I'm running for the Georgia
Right.
Senate.
They
And
like
it's,
probably don't know the difference, or they
yeah, and
just
then
kind of.
just explaining like, hey, here's how it actually works. And in fact, people don't realize until, we'd have discussion that a lot of things that actually impact their day-to-day lives are happening at the state level, whether it's education, transit, healthcare. And those are the kinds of areas where they need to get more involved and where it's easier to get involved because as opposed to trying to be to influence one representative in Congress in DC, if you can, if you're in Atlanta and you're right next to the state capitol, you can really advocate for what's important for you as well. So I think that's one challenge. What was your other question you asked for the
I forgot. I forgot,
was it like
unfortunately.
nationally you asked or
No, I don't think about it. I don't
for
think I asked
state?
about national. Have you met Governor Kemp?
I've not met Governor
He's a
Kemp.
nice guy. He's a
Sure,
nice
I'm
guy.
sure he
No,
is.
he
Yeah.
and he's kind of like, he stands his own ground. In that regard. He hasn't been too far right. Obviously doesn't swing very far left because he's Republican, but
Yeah. Oh, my hope is he will work with Democrats to make sure
I'm
things
sure
get
he will.
done.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that regardless of where people are, they should be willing to work with the other side. I would say the past record of huge surpluses, not necessarily investing in our state. I hopefully those will change, and I
Yeah.
hope to be a
A lot
voice
of the
to
surplus dollars
encourage
they
it.
return to taxpayers.
Have they already? Or
Oh, I don't know about that. I
yeah.
mean, but I don't know if they do it all the time, but I know the past few years, like a lot of taxpayers in Georgia have received like $500 rebates and stuff like that.
I mean, I would say though, we want to make sure that you're also investing in what's needed, right?
Right.
So if you can return things to taxpayers, but if our schools are not good enough, what's going to happen there, right?
Sure,
We'll make
right.
sure we're funding things in terms of what they're needed before doing that. But I'm all for it, right? We don't want to just keep all our stuff in a surplus account. either you spend it or you give it back to the taxpayers,
Yeah, and
right?
you know the education here is really interesting because I know growing up in this area, I'm from this area, a lot of the public schools had so much support from parents that they were almost like private schools. Now they're not private schools, but with the support, obviously in athletics is a big area for football and stuff like that, right? The support from the parents almost made it to the point that you have some siloed services in these public schools that are almost like private schools. And my thought was like, why don't you just go to a private school then? Like, what is the point of fighting for control over this public school when you can just afford to send your kids to private school? It's like, I guess what I'm trying to say is like, there's these really weird regional local pride levels for certain public schools. And then it's pretty obvious that other public schools that don't have that support are just completely left to the wayside. And this is not a Democratic or Republican issue in my opinion. This is something about that deals with the greater good of the city. And if we want the city to continue to grow and continue to be this massive economic powerhouse, like we technically need to invest in all these different schools
Agreed.
and in all these different districts. And to your point about people not being plugged in politically, like I'll hear some parents talk about DEI programs going on at a public school in an affluent area. And it's like, that's what your concern is? Because first off, like the DEI programs might not really be going on there. You might just be hearing that through the grapevine.
Right.
But how is that the one issue you want to talk about when you're clearly not even really plugged in into the greater political situation going on? Now, I'm
Right.
not pro DEI, but I think also it's become this. I mean, I've written about DEI issues by and large because there are some really wonky situations going on with that. But I think for someone to say that this is going on at elementary school, it might not really be true. Now, I know that across the board, you have smatterings of this happening throughout K through 12, but the reason I bring that up is because at this one elementary school they're talking about, there is no real proof that DEI is going on there. So it's like, you know, how ridiculous is that?
It's ridiculous, and it's also, I mean, personally, I think it is important to have a diverse environment, and we need to teach people the importance of diversity. And I would say, like, there is bigger problems that fall by the wayside when you focus on those kinds of like culture war issues. For example, I went to my high school, which I graduated from many years ago, and they still can't afford to buy new supplies for their science classroom.
Yeah, some of the
That's
things are pretty
like,
ridiculous,
yeah,
right?
and that's like way
Especially
more
in these
important.
very affluent areas.
Yeah.
It's like, how is that happening?
Right.
And just to speak more on DEI, I mean, I think without a doubt, Atlanta's a diverse city. I mean, you have pockets of areas where people are kind of like single race and what have you. But still, it's I guess the point that I was trying to make is that unless you can prove the DEI is actually happening at that school, what is the point of just talking about it in a tribal kind of messaging situation when there's much more issues going on? Like you might. You know, to your point, they might not be able to afford science supplies, but yet they have a brand new football field. I mean, that is ridiculous.
Right. It's like regardless of people's stance on DEI, people are taking a non-issue and making it into an issue
Yeah,
when
and
there are
like, you
bigger
know, there
questions,
are,
right?
of course, that's
Yeah.
happening throughout K through 12 in certain areas, but it just kind of glances over the actual issues, the greater issues, which are some people can't afford to send their kids to private school, or they don't want to. They think that they pay taxes and they should be kind of given this opportunity to send their kids to school for free or relatively inexpensive cost. And for them to sit there and talk about how first graders are being taught DEI when you're like, first graders really, you know, don't really know much anyway. So, I mean,
Yeah, if you look at the history of public schools in this country, it's been a huge achievement that we even built public schools and made them state funded in the first place
right.
because they created so much opportunity, and we want to make sure we continue that legacy, and we don't want only the private schools to have everything, right? Like
Yeah,
it can be both end,
right.
right?
I mean, I believe in the
Yeah.
free market. So if you want to go to private school, it's great.
Right. Same. Yeah.
And I went to public school for a little bit. I hated it. Terrible. But regardless, that's not the point of this podcast. A lot of other people like are tribalists about it. Like they love it. You know, they think it is America. But usually what it is it comes down to what I just said. You don't have enough money to buy microscopes, but yet you have a stadium for football outside. Like,
Right.
what is the point of that? You know?
Yeah, and you need to make sure to focus on priorities, right? And then the other area which we see is also very underfunded is the number of counselors for mental health.
Right.
There's a I think there's a huge ratio. It's like one counselor for several hundred students at a time. We just need more folks because especially if things are getting more and more competitive, more stressful, we need those resources available for students
And we
early.
need better hiring practices. Because I do know at some of these public schools, 20 years ago, they were telling kids that they need to be focused on going to college, like 4-year schools, and not be focused on technical or vocational trades. Well, that was obviously, I mean, nothing wrong with going to college, but that was obviously a bad move because the past 20 years have been dominated by technology and vocational trades to a degree, if you kind of lump technology into vocation.
Right, and then going to college, you make it student debt. Like, it's not always the right
It's
move.
not always the right move. And then, like, maybe you major in psychology and then you end up just working in sales. I mean, like, what was the point of that besides just being socialized? Socialization, not like socialized or socialist policies, but what was the point of going to school besides just hanging out and partying when you don't even use what your degree
Right. It's like going to school
was?
needs to have a purpose, right?
Yeah, for sure. It needs to have a purpose.
And if your plan is to work in a technical vocational job, you don't necessarily have to have a 4-year degree
And there's so
either,
many people, there's so many kids, well, they're adults now, but there's so many kids that I know from around this area who went to college who ended up doing things professionally that you might not even have to graduate high school for. So it was like, what on earth is the point of you going to college apart from just like going to football games and hanging out and binge drinking? I don't know. Those are that that's
I would say, there are some people do want to go to college for the intellectual,
sure, yeah.
rigor, and
That's
that
what I did.
kudos to them. They should do that, but not everyone wants to do that, and we shouldn't force folks to do that just to get a job, right? That's the important part of it.
So, I mean, you're more involved in this than I am. What do you, and I'm not trying to spend this whole time talking about education because that's not really a core focus of mine, but
It's core focus in mind, so I don't mind.
it's not a core focus of the podcast, rather, but that's great that you know so much about this. Like, what sort of surprising numbers are you seeing with Atlanta's public schools and Georgia's public schools?
Surprising numbers.
Or anything that you wish to talk about that you think is an issue?
I think that one thing I have seen, which is actually around the whole issue with school vouchers, people are talking a lot about
Does
that
that
in
deal with like
Georgia.
charter schools and stuff? And
Well, the idea that there's been a proposal where every parent would have the ability to send their kids to private school, with some kind of school voucher paid for by the state. So essentially, the idea is that if you opt out of the public school system, the state will decrease funding by a few thousand dollars to the public school and put that money in your pocket so that you can send whatever private
Right.
school
Is
you
that in the
want.
form of like a tax rebate
I
or
think so. It's some
okay?
kind of tax rebate, or maybe it's like a check. I don't know exact. Things there. But what was interesting there is I actually went and talked to some folks who are like in private schools because I went to a charter school for a small part of my education, and that school has now become a private school. And some of the folks there, I was just asking about school voucher stuff, and I was curious like how that's played with private schools. And in fact, a lot of private schools actually don't support that. And the reason, because they want to keep their independence. They don't want, like they want they don't want, education to be, they don't want the state to be pulling the strings in
Even
terms
though
of
the
who
state's
can go.
paying for it, because a lot of these private schools just want money. It's like a money grab.
So I'm sure some of them are like that, right? But I think a lot of them, which are maybe have nobler intentions of just of the educational
If there
goal,
is
right?
such.
There are, some folks are, there is a nobler intention in terms of the educational perspective and also the independence perspective. A lot of private schools value their independence in the sense that we're not government controlled. We don't want the legislative assembly one day to just cut our funding and then we have to do what they tell us to
Would
do,
those be like
right?
kind of religious oriented schools or just across the board?
Across the board, if you talk to some of the folks, forgot the organization's name. I think it's like the Independent School Organization of Georgia, something like that. I think it's a perspective which often isn't really heard in these debates, where it's that there is something different about a private school in terms of why it might exist or why people might go there, which maybe actually cuts against the idea that the of like taking funding away from public schools to fund private schools. So that's one interesting thing. The other thing I've seen is actually the issue of class rank. This has been a big issue in particularly public schools, some of the public schools in my district. There's been a lot of students, especially people at the top, are like fighting to get 99.9 or 99.8%. And to do that, they're often like, sometimes they're cheating. Sometimes they're doing all kinds of things around just trying to get ahead of everyone else. And what ends up happening is instead of learning being the core focus is getting the highest grade.
Yeah.
And that causes so much stress, so much tension. When I was in high school, my high school actually took away class rank, meaning that you wouldn't know your rank until the very end of the year. You'll know if you're like valedictorian or salutatorian. And what ended up happening is the students were far more relaxed. They didn't have to worry as much about like, am I in the top 10% or the top 15%? And I think
Right.
it's one thing schools should take a look at in terms of looking at schools that have done it successfully. And I know there's going to be opposition potentially to that because some people want to be ranked, right? But for the good of everyone, it is sometimes better not to rank people against each other because ultimately people are unique. You can't compare people in that way. Everyone has unique strengths, and a number is not going to define you as well.
And it's probably only important to the very top level of students who rank the highest because they'll be valedictorian or something like that. So it's like, why don't you just tell them towards the end of the term, okay, hey, here's your rank. I mean, what's the point of just like publishing the rank of all the students? I guess that's what you're saying, right?
Right, that's
Like
the
that,
idea.
to me, that's like pretty stupid to do.
It's pretty stupid,
Because
and
what are you
the
going to do to the kids who are at the bottom?
Yeah, and sometimes the school is like, let's say it's a really high performing school, and being at the bottom 20% is actually amazing.
Right.
But then your colleges all see you're at the bottom 20% of your school.
Yeah.
Like in a way, it's trying to compare things that are incomparable.
Yeah, that seems like a big mistake.
But I would say part of the solution needs to start with the colleges too. The colleges need to start understanding not to use those kinds of things for their calculations as well.
Right.
I think. Too often, college admissions seems like a zero-sum game. People are like, either I get into the top school in Georgia or an Ivy League, or there's no future for me. And I think we need to change that mindset. We need to give other schools more resources, more opportunities, so that regardless of where you go, you can be successful.
Yeah.
And we want to make sure that even the top schools should be expanding their opportunities. Places like Georgia Tech should have resources so they can have more students, so that more folks can benefit from the resources available there too.
And I think too, there needs
Yeah.
to be more transparency about what the point of the outcome is,
Yeah.
because unless you're going to go into corporate America or become a doctor or an architect or a lawyer or something like that, like it's not as important to go through certain levels of school. Maybe you go more vocational route or whichever. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur, so I technically didn't even need to finish high school, right? I also worked in family business, so I had a totally different situation. And I bring that up because it's like people get caught in my opinion, in another rat race of America, which is this kind of educational system. And it's just not always applicable to everyone, depending on what they want their outcome to be. Now, of course, some students don't know what they want their outcome to be. And I know in college I
Right.
was pre-med for a little bit until I realized I couldn't get away or fudge around organic chemistry. And then I was like, well, I'm certainly not going to do that. And I remember talking to an advisor and saying, I don't want to take organic chemistry. And they're like, well, maybe you don't want to be a doctor. And I was like, I think you're right, actually. But organic chemistry was the barrier. And I was like, I'm not going to spend any of my time studying organic chemistry. That was me. I ended up doing economics and politics. Anyways.
That's funny because I took organic chemistry actually when I was in high school to dual enrollment at Georgia
Yeah.
Tech, and I ended up taking O-Chem then, but I did not pursue it.
Yeah,
Sorry.
I remember almost doing organic chemistry in a during a summer term, and I was like, I'm not on Earth for this. But anyways, yeah, I think that there's a lot to be said for improvement in the educational system of Metro Atlanta and the state of Georgia. Because
Right.
outside of Metro Atlanta, I mean, what are educational, what's the education template look like? Like, I mean,
Template.
outside of Metro Atlanta, like what? I mean, do you know this? Like, what regions are trending higher, or is it just kind of really terrible?
I mean, I don't know the exact details, but I would say like the likely closer to the cities are likely the places where there are more resources so they can have better universities, right?
Yeah, I
And
guess so.
but it's a big gap, right, in terms of the amount of money and resource that's in Atlanta versus elsewhere. So we do want to make sure other places have great opportunities. Like there are a lot of good bright spots. For example, Augusta has a really good medical program, 7-year medical program where you
Yeah, for
can,
sure. That's where like the Medical College of Georgia is, I guess.
right.
Yeah.
So that's good. And there's places like SCAD and Savannah, et cetera,
Yeah.
right? But that's yeah. We need to invest more. The last thing I'd also mention, this also ties back to the whole problem of student loan debt. That's a big issue people are talking about at the national level, but I think that the root cause of that is that you have, like, over the past few decades, High school degree, people say, is not enough to get a job. They're like, you have to go to college in order to like get a
Well,
good job,
yeah,
right?
especially depending on what job you want, for
Right.
sure.
So a lot of folks do that, and then what ends up happening is that college isn't free. So then suddenly, something which previously you could have just gotten a diploma for free, like from high school, now you have to start getting in loans and getting paying for debt,
Right.
and then you just have a whole generation of students that are
I mean,
have
if
this
you're not a
burden.
good decision maker, you make kind of poor degree choices, and then you end up having a lot of debt, and then not going, not having a way of paying those off, in to some regard, right? So it's kind of like it on the student debt situation. And I've actually, this is a long time ago, but I actually looked at that from an investment thesis where we were looking at securitization of student debt,
Oh.
and what we were one of the main credit requirements was the higher, the more intelligent, the better the schools. The debt holder went to, the more likely, and this is just one scenario, the more likely they were to realize that they didn't have to pay all the debt they wanted or that they were supposed to because it wouldn't have hurt their situation. It's kind of interesting, but that's a whole
You mean
nother.
because it would be forgiven
Not
or
because they'd be forgiven, but because the default, like they could have worked it out in some capacity. Like it wasn't going to bottom
Oh.
them out. Like I think a lot of students who, I mean, basically that scenario was just for the very top level. And they also had the money to pay for it. So it wasn't, we were just looking at it from a default perspective. Like, were they going to default? Now, they made enough income and they had a high enough education level that they were not going to. But there was just interesting kind of nerdy theory that we also had that, well, they could default and then it technically wouldn't hurt their current prospects because it's not like a default was going to take their job away.
I see. Well, again, that's the problem because like the people at the very top are still going to be okay. But
Right,
what about everyone
exactly.
else,
Yeah.
right?
And I
And
think that's the big issue because and obviously I don't want to spend too much time on this, but we'll just close it out. I think that that's the big issue is that you have the ability to take on this massive amount of student debt very easily. And there's almost no controls around that. And then if you don't make the right decisions with your education level, then when you get out of college and you're getting a job, you're saddled with debt. Now, there's a lot of different thoughts and there's a lot of different facts floating around that some of that debt's not very high. And so, what's $200, $300 a month? But in reality, someone who's like 22, who maybe has a quarter million or more in debt, like that's a pretty daunting figure to be looking at every month.
yeah, it's tough because when you're starting your career, having to dig yourself out of a hole,
Yeah.
that's just completely different than someone who's able to start on level ground and just build their way up,
And so,
right?
the answer is
Yeah.
probably making better decisions with your student borrowing than wiping debt out.
I'm not sure what the ultimate solution here is, but I think another part to think about is that, as you said, like we are making it so easy for people to basically have that much debt in the first place,
Yeah, that's probably the real issue, right? It's
right?
like you should have some advisors kind of advising you on what the long-term implications of this taking on this debt are versus just having people, go ahead and get a few hundred thousand dollars online really easily.
Right. And it's like if you look at tuition costs, they've also ballooned, right? And
That's
it's
something that needs to be addressed.
right. And I think that's the bigger problem, right? It's like, these are people in their 20s. We should not be saying, okay, you make one decision here and this will like, mess you up for the rest of your, next few decades. The point of the government is often, like in charge of these loans, right? Or
Right.
helping make these loans. So they should be making loans that are actually going to help people's futures. They're the ones in the position of power here. So they're the ones who can actually make things better.
I know a parent
They're,
recently said, or they recently told me that Duke University was $89,000 a year. And I found that really funny because, I mean, I know some people think Duke's a really great school, but you're going to be hard pressed to get a better job going undergrad at Duke versus going undergrad at UGA. I mean, it's at that point, they kind of wash each other out. So it's really funny that some parents think it's worthwhile to send your children to Duke and pay $89,000 a year versus just a good state school, which is significantly less. But that's just I mean, we're not going to solve that in this podcast. America's educational industrial complex is really ridiculous. And one last thing on education, STEM schools. You want to see more STEM schools in Atlanta?
We want to see more STEM schools,
Yeah.
yes, but I think We want to make sure every STEM school should also be a STEAM school. I don't know if you heard of this acronym, right? Yeah,
What was
A's
it?
for arts
Okay, yeah,
and humanities, right?
and hopefully not all art derived from technology, but
I'm not, definitely not, right? And I think I've seen the best technologists are those who are also really good at humanities,
yeah.
right? If you look at Steve
Okay, I didn't know
Jobs,
that.
Steve Jobs took a calligraphy class when he was at Reed College,
Yeah,
and
that's
that's
Riley
what created the
Fink's.
font on our Macintosh,
Yeah,
right?
for sure.
So we need that second part, and that's especially important when people are working, in tech computer companies, and they need to have the ethics and
Yep.
the values to know what should be, what's right, what's wrong.
Okay, well, that's good. So what are some of your other issues that you're running on? Or if you're elected, what else do you want to do?
What else?
Obviously, education's big.
Yeah, the other thing I want to focus on is on gun safety issues. I know
Which
this.
that's going to be interesting here in Atlanta, because or in Georgia.
I'm sure it will be.
I went to a concert with some friends
Yes.
the other day, and a friend brought his gun in the car, which I didn't really mind because we were going downtown, and
Yeah.
I was the DD. But I was kind of joking with him. I was like, "As you're drinking, like, are you worried that you have a gun in the car?" And he's like, "No, I'm really afraid of it." And I was like, and we started talking about how there's no concealed carry in Georgia, or I'm sorry, there's
This.
no, you don't need a permit to conceal carry in Georgia anymore.
Right.
Now, I totally believe in the laws of America and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, Second Amendment. I totally support it, but no concealed carry permit. So the only thing that's going to stop you from carrying a gun is a metal detector.
That's scary.
That's kind of nuts.
It's kind of nuts. It's wild that it's easier to basically own and use a firearm than it is to get a driver's license,
That's crazy. And so
right?
this one friend, he's a very good friend, and I'm just using him as an example. But he said, "I carry this gun with me when I go to the grocery store because I'm not going to get taken out by some madman shooting people in the grocery store." And so what I always say is, "So does that mean you're going to shoot him in the grocery store?" Because that just opens up a whole nother can of worms. Because I would imagine if there's an active shooter in a grocery store and then you take out a gun, you become the active shooter, especially in other people's, like, their frame of reference when they're just in the chaos of what's going on and with people shooting out in the grocery store. And it just seems absolutely ridiculous. Like I
I
said,
agree.
I totally agree with gun rights, but there's got to be some better laws around it. Now, on the far left side, they want to take guns away. On the far right, as we see, they want everyone to have the ability to have a gun no matter what the situation is. And some of the big issues are mental illness and people who have substance abuse problems and people, or maybe kind of all of the above, right? And they're able to get a gun, they create these, they then perform these, like, ridiculous mass murders. It's unbelievable to deal with.
Right. We need to tone down the temperature, let's say. Like, I think, yes, there are extremists always, but that's always a minority of Americans. And
Yeah.
most everyone wants safe communities, and everyone does want to protect themselves if need be, right?
Right.
But we don't want guns to be in the wrong hands. And that's simply what we're saying. And we want to, I think part of it
And that's
is
not too much to
building the
ask,
trust.
right? There's not
Not too much to
it's too much
ask.
to ask.
Part of it, I think a lot of it, a lot of politics is building trust, right? It's telling people, hey, I'm not actually those far extremists who want to do something completely crazy. I
Right.
just want to make a community safer, and you have that goal too, right?
Yeah. And there's some interesting loopholes because I know I have a like an what's it called? An over under shotgun at my house. Okay. And I have that in an area in case I have to use it. My father-in-law is a retired judge, so he had always said, if you're gonna have something for home defense, might as well have a shotgun, right? You don't want to have some sort of AR with a laser pointer. And then obviously I have a good friend who's used to be in the armed forces, and he just doesn't agree with ARs at the home level because, I mean, if you take a shot and you miss the person you're trying to shoot, it's gonna hit your neighbors, or I mean, really, maybe hit a car driving by. Who knows? But the reason I'm bringing this up is because I'm thinking of getting a handgun for the office, obviously keep it in the safe.
Safe storage is great.
Yeah, and they've got these
Yeah.
really cool state safes now where you have like your fingerprints, stuff like that, and it unlocks it. Anyways,
Yeah.
after doing some research, I was like, "Oh, I can get a gun with a silencer. Okay. Interesting." Doing more research, I was like, "I don't know if I need to go to a store to buy this. I could just go to a gun show with cash, buy the gun, no background checks."
Wow.
What do you think about that?
That's a big problem.
That's pretty
We need
unbelievable
to close
because
those loopholes.
that
Yeah.
you'd think that that would attract some bad dudes,
It would.
without a doubt.
And
course. so, speaking to another friend who has gone to these gun shows, and I've been to some gun shows. I mean, it's been a long time, but I've been to some of these gun shows, and I've never bought a gun there. But one of my friends was at a gun show, and he met a guy who was an MS-13 gang member. He just guessed he was because of the tattoos. And the guy told him that he comes from California and goes to these gun shows in the southern states, buys all of these guns with cash, brings them back to California, sells them.
Wow.
That's unbelievable.
That's unbelievable.
You know, and I
That's
know
the
some
problem.
people are like, how dare you target MS-13? But that's just a gang that I'm mentioning. I don't really follow gangs, but you don't have to read too many headlines to realize that these MS-13 guys are bad dudes, right? So that's just one scenario, and I'm sure there's countless scenarios. And I think it's also kind of a bit like alcoholics. The alcohol industry makes most of their money by serving alcohol to alcoholics. The gun industry makes most of their money by selling guns to people who already have a lot of guns. And that's surprising. Well, I'm not surprised. I'm sorry. That's something that we should target. And I don't know how we target that. Kind of like the cat's out of the bag. We can't really roll back these laws, but going forward, we definitely need to make America safer. And I don't think America is safer by having more bad guys have easy access to guns.
I agree. And I think if you look at like what's the root cause of this, because I think most, as I said, most people want to have safe communities. And I think maybe it's just that people don't trust their government. They don't trust in the police to keep them safe. And they feel like I need to have a gun to do that myself.
Right.
So are there ways we can solve those underlying problems? Are there ways we can build more trust between communities and law enforcement to make sure that people do feel like that, okay, this is gonna like if someone comes up, a mass shooter comes up, I know I'll have there'll be a quick response happening. It's like if you see what happened at some of these other mass shootings where it took a long time for police to show up,
Right.
it's just so many lives are lost, right? And are there ways we can make sure those forces are more efficient, well trained, and so that we have safe communities as well?
Yeah. What are some of your other issues?
The other issue is, as mentioned before, healthcare,
Okay.
expanding Medicaid.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have any ideas there, but I'm very much in favor of expanding it. The way it works now is Medicaid is funded largely by the federal government, and they under the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid was expanded throughout the states. It ended up being optional, so states could only opt in to expand. And I believe nearly every state has expanded it, except for Georgia and a few other states. And what's happening is that our tax money is going to the federal government and being spent across the country to other states and not coming back to Georgia
Right.
because we have not elected to expand Medicaid. And
Okay.
it's we would save money by expanding it, but people aren't doing it because they don't want to do something that's part of Obamacare.
I personally think healthcare is completely broken in America, and I don't think it'll ever be repaired.
But we can make it better,
I
right?
think if you look, yeah, I mean, I'm sure I'm not trying to be like a doomer about it. But I think if you look at some of the situations going on in Europe where they have well, let's just look at England, where they have socialized healthcare. They also have data points. They share information. So it's not like the US, where you have all these different states that have their own healthcare situations, and they do not share information. And so, because the UK is able to share information about healthcare, they're able to solve a lot of problems. Now, UK healthcare is not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But I just wanted to bring up the fact that they share information, they have data, so they can attack certain problems properly. Now, again, I mean, I'm sure some people listening to this will be like, how can you even mention United Kingdom's healthcare? But you just can't deny the fact that maybe they have long wait times, maybe they fail in a lot of situations, but the fact that they can share data does help with some scenarios. So, anyways.
Definitely. And then just to add on that, right? It's like the first step before doing any major reform is to how do we build the right infrastructure so we can actually do evidence-based analysis, right?
Yeah.
And I think too often people just say stuff because of political positions. They're like, I want this because my party supports it,
Right.
right? But if are there ways to make our infrastructure better, bring more technologists, making sure the data can be shared, then we can actually see what works and what doesn't. And I think that would be very helpful for us to see like what kind of healthcare system is best for our country.
There's this funny joke with US, Canada, and the UK, and it says, I'm sick. And the UK is like, okay, well, your wait time's 8 months. And then it's like, I'm sick. And the US says, okay, well, it'll be $67,000. And then and when it gets to Canada, it's like, I'm sick. And Canada's like, well, would you like for us to kill you? Right? Like assisted suicide. So it's just kind of, it's funny how crazy all the scenarios are. And yeah, I just think it's kind of one of these problems because of the states. I just don't see it being fixed. And I don't know if the answer is rolling out more robust federal programs. I just don't really think about it that much. Maybe I should.
I mean, I would say our health system is not perfect,
Yeah, at
but the
all.
best we can do for the hundreds of thousands of people who are poor and don't have access to healthcare at the moment is expanding Medicaid.
Even though, I mean, I don't know if this is true, but they probably have more health issues than other people because they're poor and it's expensive
Oh,
to be poor, right?
certainly.
And they probably have bad, but they probably make really bad decisions because they're poor. I mean, not attacking them, but they probably have like bad lifestyles or poor health based on lifestyle and stuff like that. And
I mean,
you look
it's
at food
also,
deserts, right? Like
food deserts.
people who are poor and they're eating processed foods, stuff like that.
Yeah,
But so they probably have more health problems than other people.
and what's tough is like you're not empowered to make the right choices because healthy food is more expensive,
But
right?
then you're going to have
Or
people
food
argue
deserts, right?
against devoting more money to take care of them because they make poor choices. So it's a tough one.
Right. That debate's always there, but
Yeah.
ultimately, we need to take care of people who are suffering now.
Now, the good thing is we have some of the best doctors in the world. We have some of the best med schools in the world, best some of the best hospitals. So that's good, right? That's good.
Yes. So we have the capacity to fix this problem. We have the
Okay.
political will to do it.
All right. So look, let's wrap it up soon because you've been really gracious with your time. But anything else you want to talk about? Any other platforms we didn't touch on that you're running on?
And the last thing is, I did mention economy, entrepreneurship.
Yeah, we need to see more of that.
Yes, we need to see way more of
Obviously, I
that.
support that.
Yes.
Atlanta's a great venture capital, as far as the Southeast goes. We've seen an increase over the past decade, but we need more of it.
We need way more. And I think the thing about Atlanta and this area is it's a great place where companies which are already big want to come to scale because
Yeah.
it's cheaper to become here. Think of like Google and these other companies that are now
Right.
coming here. But if you're someone with if you're a young bright entrepreneur with an idea, there's some VC here, but
Yeah,
like
but
the
not
best place to
any.
go to is the Bay Area,
Yeah, for
right?
sure.
And are there ways so that we can bring that innovation ecosystem back here? So if you want to take your idea from ideation to actually the startup and all that, we have a robust ecosystem here because I think in America, where we have multiple centers of innovation, is far better than just one or two centers.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's the goal. Can we bring that more of that here as well?
No, and we do need to see more of that. I mean, I know there have been some state-supported initiatives in Georgia that, in my opinion, have fallen short for venture capital and startup incubators and stuff like that. But still, Georgia is a really good state. Atlanta's a really great state. Or I'm sorry, a really great city. You have a lot of talent here. We need a better venture capital network.
Capital network, yes. So we need more of that kind of stuff. And the other part of that too is there's other kind of infrastructure which we as a city need to build if we are going to have sustainable growth. For example, I mentioned access to healthcare, but the other one is also what about our roads and public transit? We're one of the Atlanta's like one of the only I guess most great cities in the world have incredible public transit systems
Oh yeah,
because.
we have terrible.
Yeah, you can't get around our roads everywhere, especially if you're growing and growing and
Well, like
growing,
MARTA,
right?
for instance, this is like what? Well, I don't even know why MARTA was built if we're not going to follow through with it.
I agree.
And then there's all of these arguments. They're like, well, if we build out MARTA more, we're going to have more crime. And it's like, I mean, but what was the point of building it to begin with?
Right. I mean, it's a both and, right? And it's not an either or with MARTA versus
Yeah.
less crime. You can do both at the same time.
Yeah, and it's like obviously, I went to college in Boston. They have a wonderful transportation system. Sometimes when I'm in New York, I'll take the subway and just in like literally just like Upper West Side, Central Park South, Upper East Side. I don't get into these other areas, but I love London's public transportation system. It's amazing. I don't know if we'll ever see that in Atlanta because of the political atmosphere and the political sentiment against MARTA. And a lot of people say, okay, well, we've got all these homeless people on MARTA. It's not safe. But I think the easy answer is, well, there's not enough dedicated funding going towards it. And it's also, I don't want to say it's totally useless, but it's kind of useless to people who live up here where we are in North Fulton County because it's just not properly funded. So are you going to
Yeah,
try and attack that in some way or try and improve that?
definitely. I think that'll be a big priority as well.
Yeah.
Because if Ultimately, even if you're not taking MARTA, if you're driving downtown town, if we can take out, if there's so many cars in 7585, if we can
Right.
get a small fraction of those folks to go to MARTA, that'd be a big difference. And
Yeah, for sure.
in fact, MARTA is one of the only public transit agencies in the country which is has mostly not funded by the state at all. Most of its funding comes from the city of Atlanta and the counties.
Yeah.
If we took a small fraction of what we spend into highway building and made that into making MARTA safer, more efficient, faster, that would improve lives for a lot of people.
When I lived a little more in town, I used to take MARTA down to the art center and other areas because it was a lot easier because you would just have gridlock on the highways. And I know a guy I know has been trying to get us to invest in an art gallery, art center down off Edgewood. And my answer has been, man, I'd be in the car for 2 hours. I'm not giving you a no, but it's like, how do I get around the fact of being in the car for 2 hours? And I think, if you had MARTA, right? I could park at MARTA. I could take MARTA down there and stuff like that. So, I mean, Atlanta has horrendous traffic, and MARTA would be a good way to alleviate some of that traffic.
It would. So definitely something we should be looking into. And I think part of maybe it's my parting message would see, I think we need to be more ambitious in terms of what we can do as a state and what we can do politically. That's part of what young people can help bring is, people, we need folks who are older, who have been around for a while, who know the ropes, et cetera. But the young folks are the ones who can really bring a new vision and have the energy to execute on it and say, I know that everyone has tried this for X number of years, but let's make it happen. And if you look
Right.
at all the big things that happened in the world, it's happened in spite of people saying it can't happen. So my goal is let's have an ambitious vision for what Atlanta looks like, what Georgia can look like, and let's execute on it.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, hey, Ashwin, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. Great discussion.
Thanks, Chet.